And from the Ron Scott Communications Center, from the stand, continues. Right now we are joined by a spry young gentleman of 96 years, Dave Hamilton. Dave, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good morning to you, sir.
Now, Dave, just in the last segment, we talked about That's All Brother,
yeah,
the C-47 that led the paratroop invasion, but you were one of the gentlemen who was there even before That's All Brother. You,
yes,
are a Pathfinder pilot.
Right, yeah.
So how did you get started in aviation?
I got started in aviation having a private license, and I was in boarding school, and I had my private license by the time Pearl Harbor hit, and I enlisted as a private the day after Pearl Harbor. And I wanted to fly, so they said, oh, you have to take an exam for the college equivalent of 2 years. And they said, to do that, you've got to go over to New Jersey to the Stevens Institute and all this. So I went over. Dad handed me a $10 bill to cover the cost. And I passed the exam. And I said, how long do I have to wait to become an aviation cadet? They said, well, we're jammed up right now. And I waited 3 months, and then I got orders to go to Kelly Field. We went to Kelly Field and got classified as a pilot, and then you became an aviation cadet. And my pay went from $54 a month to $70 a month, and they took $6 out for laundry. But we learned everything about being an officer and drilling and obstacle courses and physical fitness. And we did that for 3 months at Kelly Field on the hill. And then we reported to Grider Field in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, as primary flyers. And we arrived on the 4th of July, and the upper class, which were all West Point cadets, were having their upper class party. And they said, enjoy yourself tonight because hell starts tomorrow. Oh. So all of their hell turned out to be wonderful type of hazing, mm-hmm, that all had to do with air safety. Starting procedures before you started your meal, turn off your engines and everything when you finished your meal, clear your area when you turn, and you couldn't walk by yourself on the campus until you were upper class, and you had to walk with somebody else and cleared your area. But we drilled, and the West Pointers were great. I think they shaped us up in very good shape. We only had two losses in primary, which was very, very rare.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed. What was the first airplane that you flew in the service?
In the service was a PT-19, a wonderful Fairchild with a Lycoming, I think, and it was an open cockpit.
Right.
And our pilot instructors were all civilians, and we knew that there'd be two military checks during the course of the proceeding. But my instructor was a crop duster, and he taught me things in an airplane that later saved my life in different other airplanes.
I'm sure.
And he was a wonderful guy, and I passed my military checks and graduated up. We went to BT-13A Vultivibrators at Perrin Field in Sherman, Denison, Texas, up on the Red River. And we got introduced to night flying, formation flying, acrobatics, basically, and, of course, some basic instruments. And in those days, it was needle ball and airspeed. And we developed from there. And I can remember as a private pilot having to pay $25 an hour for Link Trainer. Mm-hmm. And it was free in the Air Force, and so I took advantage of it.
Very good. So how did you transition then to multi-engine?
I went to twin-engine advanced.
Okay.
And we didn't fly T-6s. They flew mostly Beechcraft and Cessnas, but there were a bunch of us who were set aside, and we flew Curtiss AT-9s. And you don't have one here at Oshkosh.
No.
And there isn't one that I've ever seen in an air museum anywhere in the world. The ones that left at the end of the war were sold to Cuba, and they became Cuba's frontline fighter, I think. And I don't know what the Cubans did, but they didn't float very well, so who knows. But there are no fully finished AT-9s in an air museum anywhere.
Okay.
And I checked with Dayton, Ohio, at the Air Force Museum there. They have a nose of one and one wing.
Okay.
And that's the total, and I guess they're still looking for parts. And I don't know. Not even Curtis can help him there.
We're talking with Dave Hamilton, who's the last of the Pathfinder pilots from D-Day. As I mentioned, 96 years old, but you certainly have more energy than I do.
I've done working hard.
And this is your first time at Oshkosh as
well. Yes, it is.
All right.
Yeah.
And are you enjoying it so far?
Absolutely. A wonderful experience. Just great.
Good. Yeah. How did you transition then from multi-engine into Pathfinder training?
Well, after graduation in twin engine and flying the AT-9, we were told that that was the checkout plane for the P-38 and the A-20. So we had visions of, you know, grandeur. And then 14 of us were told, you're going to troop carrier at Bergstrom Field. United Airlines has set up a school, and you'll have 30 days there to get 30 hours in C-47s, which we did. And then I got assigned to the 436 troop carrier group up in Alliance, Nebraska. And I found out where that was, and I got a free ride out of Austin via a couple of other stops to Cheyenne. And I hit Cheyenne right at the time of the Frontier Days rodeo, and Gene Autry was the Grand Marshal, and he was a sergeant in the Air Force. And there wasn't a room in the place in the town.
Right.
He had a suite at the Frontier Hotel, and there were two bedrooms. I asked the manager if the sergeant would be kind enough to offer a second lieutenant a room, and a message came back, yes. So I went, had a nice sleep, got up, and Sergeant Autry bought the second lieutenant's breakfast the next day. And one of the planes from the 436 group was in there. We'd had a little snowstorm. We were all helped sweep the wings off and went to Alliance, Nebraska, which was a desolate area right next to the sand hills, and there we learned how to fly. I became eventually a first pilot, or aircraft commander, as they call them. But I served as a co-pilot for squadron commander for a while, and he was a TWA captain, flew four engine. And boy, he taught me things that unbelievable. And between him and my primary instructor and every instructor I ever had, just added to the fund of knowledge. So when we went overseas with the 436, we went to Bottisford in England after flying the southern route through Puerto Rico and British Guiana, down across Belém, and then to Ascension Islands and up. I lost an engine going through the pass into Marrakesh and had to go into Agadir, which is right on the coast. And the only American outfit there was a PBY sort of submarine reconnaissance group. And eventually, 10 days later, I got an engine. I thought the engine had come out of Casablanca and Materiel. No, it had to come out of Homestead Field, Florida. So I had a few days to spend in Agadir, Morocco, a wonderful place. The dove shooting was absolutely fantastic. And it had a wonderful beach and water. Oh, it was just great. And I gather it was a place where the French came for their vacations.
Okay.
But then we went up to England, and we were in England, and in the very end of January, because I arrived early January on a top secret move, landed in Cornwall at Newquay, and a lieutenant got aboard the plane, and he says, "There's Lieutenant Hamilton here," and I held up my hands. He says, "Call your mother in London." My mother ran a Red Cross club in London, and evidently my father had let her know that I was on my way. So even though they weren't married, there was a very closeness with the three kids.
Okay.
I was the middle boy and three boys. But the colonel called me in on the 1st of February, and he said, "Dave, I don't know if this has interested you, but I want to send a couple of crews to Pathfinder School. You'll be able to pick your crew with the exception of the navigator. And those navigators, you'll probably have a navigator from this group, but not necessarily your squadron. And they're being trained by the Royal Air Force at the RAF Pathfinder School at Bovington. So I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll give it a shot." And he said, "You're being picked because you have more instrument time than anybody else in the squadron except the squadron CO and the operations officer, and they can't go." So I went, and it was a fabulous experience learning to fly Pathfinder style, three-ship formation maximum. We dropped paratroopers in practice. Two things happened when you reported to Joe Crouch, who was the colonel. He was only a lieutenant colonel then, but he tore up your instrument card. He said, I'll reissue your instrument card when I give you your check, and we'll do that before the invasion. Okay. Then he said, one other thing. You will drop in practice with the stick you're going to drop in combat. You're going to know those boys by their first name, blood type, and everything. And that was a miracle. Knowing those guys made a join, and it was a superb group. And I have pictures of those. Yeah. And we went in. It was D-Day. We were bigoted, as the British say, briefed on May 28th. And we had briefings with the sand tables for the troopers and everything. And then they delayed it by 24 hours because of weather. And we eventually knew we were going to go in. And double British summertime, you could read the newspaper at 10:30 at night. And we took off about 11. And we got to our drop zone. And, of course, there were two different entry points onto the continent, 101st, first nine airplanes, 82nd, the second nine airplanes, in flights of three. And then there were two planes who dropped at the glider landing zones, and they had their first glider landing at dawn. We did not ever pull gliders in Pathfinders. Right. And we didn't have pararax in our airplanes because they cut out the view of the PPI scope that we had in our belly, great big thing with a plastic cover around it, which the 8th Air Force eventually used for high-altitude bombing, called Mickey.
Yes.
And my navigator was a fabulous guy called Carl Jones, and he got the nickname G-Box, which was the British term for the Loran, but it was Shoran. And we were able to fly low-level anywhere in Northern Europe and know where we were within 50 yards, which was pretty good.
That's right.
With the PPI and the Shoran, you could fly down canals under high tension lines, do all kinds of nasty things.
All right. Well, Dave, we are out of time in our interview segment, but we certainly appreciate you being here, and you're going to actually fly on That's All Brother later on today. You're hosting a flight on the C-47, so
right.
Enjoy that. Have
I
a great time.
I look forward to it.
Good.
Yes.
And that is our show for today. Tomorrow,
thank you, Steve.
Tomorrow we'll welcome Jeff Bourbon, and he'll talk about flying the Yak-110. Also, we'll talk with the Aeroshell aerobatic team and get a preview of Women Venture with Heather Penny, who is a race pilot and jet ace as well. And we'll talk to her. And this is From the Stand. I'm Steve Buss, and this is EAA Radio.